Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
You don't just live in your home. You live in your neighborhood as well. So when you're shopping for a home, you want to know as much about the area around it as possible. Luckily, Homes.com has got you covered. Each listing features a comprehensive neighborhood guide from local experts. Everything you'd ever want to know about a neighborhood, including the number of homes for sale, transportation, local amenities, cultural attractions, unique qualities, and even things like median lot size and a noise score. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building
a life. For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at brag-worthy prices at your DSW store or DSW.com.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
614, highs of 89 today. I guess a chance for showers because it rained yesterday. Who knows? Maybe it'll rain today. Then a 50% chance for showers tomorrow. Then it cools off a little bit for the weekend. Highs only in the low to mid-80s and nothing but sunshine on Saturday and Sunday. So we'll look forward to that. Hopefully the humidity will be down as well. Jesse Holcomb joins us now, professor of journalism and communication at Calvin University, a former associate director of research at the Pew Research Center, to talk about President Trump and his dust-up with Jimmy Kimmel and his threat Thursday to revoke broadcasting licenses from networks with late-night hosts who make jokes or comments at his expense. How you doing, Professor?
Doing well. Good morning to you.
The first thing I thought of when I heard this was President Trump should thank the good Lord that Johnny Carson isn't still on the air.
Yeah, no kidding. Yeah. But, you know, there's nothing that our president seems to relish more than a little bit of an argument or dust up with the media. This is you talk to anyone who knows him or has followed him through all of his years in politics and business in New York. This is something that sort of cuts to the core of Donald Trump's character. He's been doing this kind of thing for decades, since he was a business mogul in New York, arguing with the New York tabloids, at the same time trying to curry favor desperately with them.
Somebody texted in about, you know, talking about Trump again, Trump derangement syndrome, blah, 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 blah. But the truth of the matter is President Trump wants us to talk about him. He says these things. Sometimes I think, I don't know if he's serious. I don't know if he's floating a trial balloon. I don't know if it's an iron fist in a velvet glove, or he's just saying stuff to be controversial so people talk about him and he dominates the news cycle. Thoughts?
Thoughts? Well, this is one, you know, I usually have a lot to say, Tommy, but I'm gonna plead the fifth in trying to discern the inscrutable mind of President Trump. What motivates him? Why does he do what he does when it comes to his sort of constant scuffle with the news media? I can't necessarily say. I just know that he's got a long history of doing this. It really ramped up during the 2016 election with the famous enemies of the people line. What I will say is that it does have real world consequences. What we see in public opinion research over the last 8 years or 9 years that Trump has been in national presidential politics is that our polarization has increased in terms of our attitudes about the news media. general antipathy and hostility toward the mainstream media from conservatives and Republicans, while Democrats have generally tended to stay on the side of institutional news media. But we've seen increased threats against the media, and there are real-world consequences. What we see with lawsuits and the impact on public media, there are policy and economic implications for some of these whims and impulses that Trump projects.
So when he talks about revoking broadcasting licenses from networks, that drives me crazy because networks aren't licensed. Individual stations are, correct?
Yeah, that's correct. But, you know, he will sort of say something off the cuff, and the may have a sort of a loose relationship with the facts.
But the other thing is that he's taking the businessman's approach to this and not the dictator's approach, if you will. And what I'm saying by that, what I mean by that is he's not having anybody arrested or hauled before a firing squad. What he's doing is threatening them either in court or the finances in terms of mergers or acquisitions or denying this or delaying that. That's where he's hitting them, right?
That's right. So for folks who are claiming that Trump is going straight to the extreme end of the fascist or dictator playbook, I don't necessarily think that the facts bear that out. You could arguably place Trump a little bit more in the sort of Viktor Orban camp. But what we've seen here is actions that amount to pressure, to threats, to innuendo, certainly in the case of the Jimmy Kimmel incident. I, at least in my view, I don't think you can necessarily argue that Brendan Carr, the FCC chairman, was the one who, you know, there's no smoking gun there. He wasn't the one who canceled Jimmy Kimmel. That was Disney and ABC. But they were bowing to pressure.
In what way, Professor, pressure of what variety?
Well, from not just one, but multiple fronts. So you had comments made by Brendan Carr surrounding the monologue that got all this attention from Jimmy Kimmel. But you also had some of these station groups, Sinclair and Nexstar, that really pushed back in protest and said they weren't going to carry Kimmel's program after the quote-unquote offensive things that he had said. You also had a public pushback, too. You know, the nation is sort of a tinderbox right now when it comes to political rhetoric, where you've got folks sort of more on the left who are very upset that Kimmel's show got iced for a while. Folks on the right who can't stand Kimmel for what he said. And at the end of the day, we've got a market-driven media system, and executives are going to be interested in the bottom line. And when they've got station networks that don't want to carry their show and they've got, you know, audience protesting, you know, that can be powerful, even as in innuendo from the executive branch also isn't nothing.
Somebody texted in and said, you're wrong. To his credit, Johnny Carson was apolitical on the air, was adamant about that, keeping true to the principle. No one knew Carson's political beliefs just as he had intended. Leno was similar in behavior. The only thing I said was Johnny Carson would have skewered Trump just as he skewered Nixon and Ford and Reagan and Clinton and all of them. He was equal in the fact that he skewered people. I guess in that sense, you didn't know what his political beliefs were. But he did give the presidents a hard time, whoever it was that was in office. And I don't know how President Trump would have responded to that is the only point I was making. 6:21 more. When we come back, we'll talk about the public's reaction to what public opinion is on Trump's attacks on the media. When we come back right now, time for traffic, WWL. 626, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Jesse Holcomb, professor of journalism and communications at Calvin University, also a former associate director of research at the Pew Research Center. Professor, to me, it seems like, okay, let every network, every station do what they want, put whatever programming on that you want, and let's compete in the free market and see who watches it and see who doesn't. I understand Fox has some show on with somebody that does a comedy show at night. I don't know who's winning in the ratings or who's not, or how you even determine ratings anymore with the cable and streaming and so forth. What does public opinion say about Trump and the media, or the media and Trump?
Well, like I was saying earlier, Tommy, Trump's entry into national politics had an impact, arguably, on how the American public view the news media. So we know that we're something of a polarized nation, with Republicans and conservatives on one end clustering around public opinion about certain set of issues and attitudes, and liberal Democrats on the other hand. This is also true of our news media. So what we've seen over the last 10 years is Republicans and conservatives really clustering in terms of the way they follow news and their attitudes about the news around Fox. Fox is their channel. Whereas, what we see is most Republicans saying that they enjoy and trust Fox News as their main source. But Democrats still following the major networks, the national cable networks, CNN, NBC, ABC, and CBS. And that has really solidified New York Times, Wall Street Journal, and so forth. Part of this has to do with the way that these national media outlets have positioned themselves in the Trump years. Many of them, if you go from the New York Times to CNN and so on, have had an adversarial relationship with the president. They have used their platform and their reporting to call out actions and behaviors that perhaps they see as a threat to American democracy. And this, as you can imagine, has further turned off conservative audiences. Trump himself has called out these outlets for this kind of reporting and this kind of news agenda. Trump is a newsmaker. He's done a lot of things to sort of disrupt arguably the political culture that America had been used to for many years. This has activated journalists in the national media who see his actions and his statements as a disruption of the norms. It makes it newsworthy in their view. And so then even in some cases to report certain actions, behaviors, policies, and rhetoric is to introduce a perception that these news media are hostile to Trump.
Thank you, Professor. I appreciate your time and your insights. Jesse Holcomb, Professor of Journalism and Communications at Calvin University, also a former Associate Director of Research at the Pew Research Center. For me, coming in at the tail end of Carson growing up, I thought late night was supposed to be skits and interviews with celebrities and who's got a movie coming out, and then you clown around with this one and get that one to play this and the other thing, not a political diatribe, but I guess it's gone into that. What do I know? I go to bed at 8 o'clock because I get up at 3:30. We'll take a break and back talk to Jeff Palermo about LSU right now. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. 6:43, 17 till 7, Tommy Tucker, WWL. Well, here we go. Jeff Palermo joins us now to talk about not only LSU's new schedule, but Whit Weeks. What? How you doing, Jeff?
I'm doing well, Tommy. How about yourself?
I am okay. I'm just looking at your story here that was posted 39 minutes ago, and I'm agape. I don't know what to say.
Well, hey, love is in the air. That's all I can say.
Tell people what we're talking about.
Well, it's LSU Ole Miss week, and it's a great rivalry. A reason why the Southeastern Conference decided that Ole Miss should be one of LSU's three permanent opponents. But what adds a little bit more in intrigue into this game is the fact that Whit Weeks is apparently dating one of the daughters of Lane Kiffin, Landry Kiffin. And their relationship became known, like most relationships nowadays, it seems to be known, through Instagram. A photo of the two looking very happy together was posted on Landry Kiffin's Instagram account, and Whit Weeks actually referred to it or acknowledged it. And so, they're apparently an item, and this looks like this maybe has been going on for a while. There's also a picture on Landry Kiffin's Instagram page of her and Ella Springfield, who is the fiance of Garrett Nussmeier. So I'm not sure what Lane thinks of all this. Maybe somebody will ask him, but it's just kind of very interesting that your star linebacker for LSU is dating the daughter of the head coach of the opposing team this week.
The daughter goes to school at Ole Miss or not? Is she not in school?
Would imagine she does. Whether she has graduated or not, I'm not exactly sure. How they met, how this all started, not exactly sure.
So let's talk about what the SEC is expected to announce today, although it's the worst-kept secret ever in the history of the world, right?
Yeah, it is a bit of an unkept secret. There's still more information that will be revealed tonight when the SEC Network lays out basically we're going to find out when – well, we'll back it up a little bit. Yesterday on 3.com, Chris Flo, who's a fantastic reporter who worked for ESPN for many years, broke the story, leaked the story of who LSU's three permanent opponents will be when the conference goes to a nine-game schedule starting next year. So you're going to play three teams every single year from 26 – the same three teams every year from 2026 to 2029, and then they'll reevaluate the permanent opponents. So you're playing three permanent opponents during those four seasons, and then you'll play – six other teams. So we know who the permanent opponents for LSU are, Texas A&M, Arkansas, and Ole Miss. Surprising, not Alabama. Alabama is usually the highest rated television, or one of the highest rated television games, not only in the Southeastern Conference for the season and for college football nationwide. And considering, you know, this whole nine-game conference schedule and conference realignment, money is behind all of it. You would think you would have one of the most watched football games. Make sure you preserve that. But Alabama already has two natural rivals in Tennessee and Auburn. And if you gave them LSU, that would be – even when Nick Saban was the head coach and there was this debate on how to have future schedules, he didn't like the idea of having Tennessee, Auburn, and LSU as three permanent opponents. So Alabama gets its way a little bit. They'll play Mississippi State as their third permanent opponent. But here's what we'll also find out tonight when the SEC Network reveals. We'll find out who all the opponents are for LSU in 2026. So we'll find out the other six teams that LSU will play in conference play. Dates will not be released until December. But we'll get an idea of who LSU will play. We'll find out if they will still play Alabama next year. Will they still play Florida next year? If they don't play them in 2026, do they play them again in 2027? Or do they wait until 2028? So will the because you look at this season's schedule is the same as last year's, except it's reversed. You know, you're going to Ole Miss this year instead of hosting them this year. So will they do that for 2026, where you're playing somewhere next season and then you return the trip, or that team returns the trip in 2027, or do they break it up a little bit? So we'll find all that out tonight. So that's going to be at 6 o'clock on the SEC Network.
Did geography have anything to do with this? Because I'm looking at Texas A&M and Ole Miss, and that rivalry goes back a long way at Arkansas, the three states that surround Louisiana. I know Mississippi State is Alabama's closest SEC rival, I believe.
Yes. Yeah, I think Starkville and Tuscaloosa are like 80 miles apart. Oh, yeah, I think geography played a huge role in all this. And I think it's more of the natural rivalries too, because I mean, yeah, LSU, Alabama, that's the biggest rivalry for LSU, but for Arkansas, you could make a strong argument that the game that their fan base and that program really gets up for is the LSU game. That's a game that they, you know, there's a a trophy. You play for a trophy in that game. You play for a trophy in the LSU Ole Miss game. LSU A&M has turned into, I would say, a very spirited rivalry. Now, some would say, hey, why don't you play LSU Texas? Those are two more, you know, those are premier programs. Those should be permanent opponents. Well, I mean, I think you could have looked at this, you know, a thousand different ways and said, well, Florida and Tennessee should play every year because that was one of the best rivalries in college.
That was a big one
in the 90s. Yeah. And they're not. But, you know, there were going to be I love the fact they're playing a nine-game conference schedule, but I'm not that excited LSU is not playing Alabama every year. It will be weird whether it's going to be next year, 2027, 2028, whatever that first season is, and you look at that 12-game schedule for LSU, and you don't see Alabama on there because that is the game, let's face it, that you get ready for. That game on November 8th, November 7th, it's always that second or first weekend of November.
After a bye.
And we've just gone accustomed to it, and in one of these years coming up, we're not going to have it. And it's just going to be like, well, what's going to be the match? Because that game was always kind of the measuring stick too, right? This is kind of where you're at. Now you don't even have it. So it'll be interesting. But there will be other good games on there, whether it's LSU going to Georgia or hosting Texas, visiting Texas. You'll still have a lot of those. There's still the schedule. I'm glad we're seeing a nine-game conference schedule because look at what happened last week, Tommy. They're just, you know, the game's over after 5 minutes, and then you're just kind of going through it. It's, you know, you just need less of those kind of games. We talked about it last week. Even Coach Frank Selfo is not excited about the idea of FCS teams playing FBS. We just need to move beyond that and have most of these games or nearly all these games be as competitive as they can be.
And looking at the map, it amazes me. I realize that College Station is closer to Baton Rouge than is Austin, and it also amazes me that I was able to drive from Austin yesterday after work to New Orleans, which is a long way. 6:51, 9 till 7, traffic now, WWL. All right, 6:57 a half. Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Jeff Palermo, WWL.com columnist, Louisiana Network news director, talking about LSU's three permanent SEC opponents. But also tonight, we'll find out who LSU's 2026 SEC opponents are. And it's a nine game. Tell me who's LSU going to play next year? Nine SEC games, and what does that leave?
So, yeah, what I have a feeling, since LSU has played the likes of, you know, South Carolina, let me think about it, you know, South Vanderbilt, Oklahoma the last two seasons, I think you're going to probably see on that 2026 schedule Texas and Georgia. And I think maybe in the end, while we might be a little bit bummed out that there's not the LSU-Alabama game on there, and granted, I get it, Alabama's not who Alabama was with Nick Saban no longer there, but they're still – a very formidable opponent, but I think by not having Alabama as a permanent opponent, you at least avoid the possibility of playing Alabama, Georgia, and Texas in the same year. And I think that's probably, that will be a good thing. So I'm thinking you're going to see, since LSU has not faced Georgia and Texas the last couple seasons, I have a feeling you're going to see them on there. You'll probably see Tennessee on there as well. So the teams that LSU really hasn't played the last couple of years, I think, will be on that 2026 schedule.
Now, another question I had was recruiting, if that played a hand in any of this. But I guess with name, image, and likeness and salary cap and all of that stuff, it's all about the money now and not necessarily location, right?
I think all this is about money at this point, Tommy. I mean, but I think in the end, like I say, I'm glad to see they're going to a nine-game schedule. The ACC, for what it's worth, announced yesterday they're going to a nine-game schedule. So I think eventually we're kind of moving into the direction of, you know, you're just your four major conferences and all those schools eventually just playing each other, and no longer these matchups against the FCS or even Group of Five schools.
Thank you, Jeff.
Many years down the road, but it's
7:15 on this Tuesday morning, September 22nd, pretty much more of the same weather-wise. Hans Liljeberg joins us now, Jefferson Parish Council member. Talk about Bucktown and a playground. How you doing, Hans?
Good morning, Tommy. I'm doing great.
Let's talk about what's going on with the $1.8 million playground in Bucktown. Where's it going to be, and tell me about it.
So it's going to be, if you've been out there and you know where the kayak launch is, if you're like getting ready to launch your kayak, it's right to your left. It's going to be on, it's going to be, we believe it'll be the highest point in Jefferson Parish, kind of like Monkey Hill in New Orleans.
Yeah.
It's actually going to be really neat. It's not only going to be a great place for kids to play. Of course, it's going to be all inclusive.
Mm-hmm.
And not like separated. It's going to be like all kids of all abilities can play in one spot, which is really kind of the new way of doing things, and it's going to be great. But the really cool thing about it, it's educational. It's going to be in the shape of a shrimp boat.
Mm-hmm.
And as you know, being from Belchase, the outriggers that are going to be big nets, mm-hmm. and
the kids
are going to climb on the nets.
That's awesome.
It's going to be really cool. They have a hole in the boat, like a, you know, like where kids can jump down and land on a net. It's going to be a lot of fun.
How did the idea for this come about?
We've had a master plan. I would love to take credit for it, but it's been in existence before I took office. Mm-hmm. So the master plan to kind of rejuvenate Bucktown. The idea was to, you know, when we were kids, that was kind of our playground, right? And mm-hmm. I grew up near the lake, and there wasn't a formal playground out there, but that's where we went. You know what I mean? We had all that grass, all that space, and that's where we hung out. Somewhere along the line, we got away from it. And this is all designed to bring people back. The lake is our biggest asset, I believe. Mm,
I think so, too.
It's all designed to get us back over there.
I think Orleans Parish is missing out a lot on the lakefront as well. I think that's a giant asset that they have that for whatever reason, it just kind of goes... I guess maybe because of people living here. I don't know. When do they start breaking ground on this, Hans?
Shortly. We just cut the ribbon on it last week, and we should be finished with it next year.
Tell me what else is going on out at Bucktown.
We have a whole lot going out at Bucktown, actually. So if you've been out there recently, you've seen, as I mentioned, the kayak launch. There's a big breakwater, so you can take your kayak from Bucktown to Bonneville. There is a bird's nest, which is an elevated structure. It's really an incredible view. You can look out into the lake, look out into the marsh. And again, this is all educational. You know, we have signs everywhere educating you on the marsh and the vegetation and so on and so forth. We have, what am I missing? The Blue Way and in the near future, this is going to be really exciting. We have the pavilion and a community garden. The pavilion is going to be open air on the bottom for farmers markets or whatever. The top is the way I envision it is something like where at Southern Yacht Club, that just incredible view of the lake.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be something similar to that for wedding receptions or, you know, things of that nature. We also have attached to the pavilion, we're going to have a community garden. We hope that none of this is in the too distant future. We also have a transient boat dock, meaning if you're out in the lake in your boat coming from wherever, you know, the North Shore or New Orleans, you can go across the levee to one of the great restaurants. As you know, right over the levee, you got Arno's and Beanie's,
mm-hmm.
great Thai restaurants. You know, you can just park your boat, walk over the levee, get something to eat, get back on your boat, and go wherever you're going.
Whenever I have Joe Geruso on, somebody texts me about West End and that being a joint venture with Jefferson Parish. But could that be? Is that anything to do with Jefferson Parish? I'm looking at the map here. It's mostly Orleans Parish, right?
It's mostly New Orleans. It's a third Jefferson and two thirds New Orleans. Mm-hmm. But as I always like to say, that we have the good part. You know, the Jefferson part is the waterfront part. For years, New Orleans, and it's, so the problem with that is New Orleans, you know, two thirds is in New Orleans, one third is in Jefferson.
Mm-hmm.
It's all reclaimed water bottom, so the state owns it. And of course, because of where it is, the Corps of Engineer has kind of jurisdiction over it. So it's really just this mosh of different government entities that it seems like every time we make a step to get somewhere, something happens and we take two steps backward. We were actually pretty well, we agreed on everything. We were kind of moving forward. it ran awry. So there's right now, I think we're trying to figure something out.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Possibility means you have a chance.
Passion opens the door to all possibilities.
When I feel like anything's possible, I feel kind of giddy.
I want to be an astronaut,
an artist,
an actress.
To visit another country.
All I need is a backpack and a pair of shoes and I'll find a way.
That I'm able to do anything I set my mind to.
I've never felt like more things are possible than right now.
In the right shoes, anything's possible.
DSW, countless shoes at brag-worthy prices. Imagine the possibilities.
You open the fridge, there's nothing there. So what's it gonna be? Greasy pizza? Sad drive-thru burgers? Dish by Blue Apron is for nights like that. These are the pre-made meals of your dreams. At least 20 grams of protein, no artificial flavors or colors, no chopping, no cleanup, no guilt. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Why are more women than ever choosing Natural Cycles? The hormone-free, side-effect-free way to take control of your fertility. Natural Cycles is a birth control app that uses your temperature to find your fertile window. It is more than a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app, and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
Oh, but I don't know something needs to look. I mean, the two-thirds New Orleans really could go forward with it without Jefferson. So we kind of need to be a part of it because it impacts us, obviously, because we have that one-third by the water. So we need to stay in touch on it. We need to figure something out. But you know, New Orleans doesn't need us to go forward. It's actually kind of funny, Tom, because I'm sure you remember when back in the day, all those restaurants were over the water in Jefferson Parish.
Yeah, and I was going to ask you about that. I remember walking across as a little bitty kid, a bridge to Jefferson Parish. Where was that bridge, Hans?
So if you have your back to New Orleans and you're facing the water, you're facing, say, the west.
Yeah.
That bridge, if you just kind of travel to your, walk around to your left right there, the bridge was right there.
That bridge is no longer there, is it?
That bridge is no longer there. In fact, there's a giant pump station
right
there.
That's what I thought, yeah.
And that's why we can't have restaurants over the water anymore because of the pump
station. All right, let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Hans Liljeberg, our friend, Jefferson Parish Council member, about the new playground in Bucktown. It could be exciting. Hans, will it be higher than Monkey Hill or not? Do you know, elevation-wise?
I'm just going to say yes.
I would make sure that it is, just so you can say you got the highest. I would put
That's
a
right.
sign up that says elevation 12 feet or something like that. 722 traffic now, WWL. All right, 727, Tommy Tucker, WWL, back with Hans Liljeberg, Jefferson Parish Council member, telling us about the $1.8 million playground coming to Bucktown Harbor. It could be like simulate a shrimp boat with nets that the kids can climb on and so forth. It could be educational. Let me talk to you about the Metairie Towers. What's going on with that, Hans?
Metairie Towers, the auction started today. They're trying they have been trying to, you know, they didn't have enough money to get across the finish line. What they wanted to do, which I was fully supportive of, is rather than demolish and start over, they wanted to renovate it, and they wanted to go up and have like penthouse suites on the top, which by the way, speaking of the best view in Jefferson Parish, that really was. I mean, you could look it felt like you could reach out and touch the Superdome, turn around and reach out and touch the lake. It was really a spectacular view. Unfortunately, they couldn't get where they needed to be. They were looking for investors to try to partner with them. I mean, I think all of the heavy lifting is done. They just didn't have the money to get across the finish line. I hope that happens still. I guess it's still a possibility. In the meantime, they're trying to auction it off to try to get somebody to buy it from them. I know that the developer has hopes that whoever does take it from here, if somebody does buy that auction, continues on the path that they've started, and frankly, so do I, because I think it was a good path.
So I've been having to go to Metairie Road a lot lately, and I've passed there every day, and I've realized what a delightful area that is, and I just don't understand why that's not a slam dunk for somebody. Is it about people that would want the apartments? Because that's such a desirable place to live. I don't understand what's holding it up.
I don't think that was it. I mean, I believe that the project is a good project, and I think it's. I know that they had pre-sold a fair number of units already.
Mm-hmm.
I just think that they, you know, again, a project of this magnitude is, you know, I think that when they started this thing, they were like, look, every single piece needs to fall right into place, and mm-hmm. if we have a 1 week delay, it's, you know, we can't pay the interest for that week. So I think that was kind of the big issue with them. And a project of that magnitude is going to have some delays.
Yeah, you can't plan on everything falling into place and count on the interim financing. That'll kill you. Let me ask you, what would you like to see there? What are the people saying they would like to see there?
Exactly where Chaffenberg was going with it. I mean, just a complete renovation, high end condos, I think, is what I would like to see. I think that's what the people around here would like to see.
Man, I wish I could afford one, I'll tell you that. Thank you, Hans. Hans Liljeberg, Jefferson Parish Council member. We'll take a break, come back, talk about autism and Tylenol right now. Time for WWL First News. For that, we go to Ian Ozan. All right, here we go. 7:44, 16 till 8. Tommy Tucker, WWL. As I said earlier, if I was President Trump, or if I was advising him, I'd say, you know what, man, look, you got plenty to do with Ukraine, and you got plenty to do with the economy and everything else. Let's not weigh into autism and Tylenol. But the president chose to, so let's talk to a doctor and a scientist about it and see what they think. Dr. Megan Mayer joins us now, assistant professor of clinical psychiatry at LSU Health New Orleans. Good morning, doctor. How are you?
Good morning. Good morning. I'm doing well. How are you?
I'm okay. Let's talk about I guess autism at first, and what kind of links they have, if they found any links to autism at all, scientifically.
Sure. So autism is caused by a variety. It's a combination of genetic and environmental influences. So they haven't been able to pin down a specific cause, and it's likely caused by a variety of different things.
I'm here to listen to you. I'm here every day, doc.
So some are inherited genes, and they have been able to isolate some of the genes, but that only accounts for a small amount of the autism that we know.
So there are markers. That's what I wanted to ask you, that you can look at, I guess, someone that has autism or their genetic makeup or whatever, there are certain markers on the DNA. I don't want to hurt myself here using the wrong phrase, but that you can tell that would predispose somebody
to autism.
Okay.
In some cases, yes.
So in that way, it would be nature, but there's a lot of arguments for nurture as well, right? For a lot of different, well, maybe I'm confusing the nature and nurture thing here, but there are a lot of environmental factors as well, or physical factors. Help me out here, Doc. I've talked myself into a scientific corner.
So you're correct. You're correct. So there are some environmental factors. So there's prenatal conditions that can put a child at risk for having autism. And those could be maternal autoimmune diseases or obesity or gestational diabetes. Or it can also be complications at birth. So if a child is born prematurely before 26 or if they are born with a low birth rate, or if there's any kind of fetal distress or complications at birth that can increase the risk of a child having autism.
Is there any treatment for autism, any cure for autism, or is there anything that needs to be cured, or is it just something that needs to be adapted to?
Oh, that's a great question. So there's no specific, there's no cure for autism. It's how a child is wired, how their brain is wired. Mm-hmm. But there are certainly different things that can be done to help a child with autism. So there's a specific type of therapy called ABA, or applied behavioral analysis, that can be done with a child with specific behavioral specialists that can help them learn to manage frustration better. Because one of the symptoms of autism is becoming irritable or easily overwhelmed. And sometimes for younger kids, that can lead to major tantrums and meltdowns. So ABA, it helps with a lot of different things, but certainly can help with frustration tolerance and tantruming.
Have they found anything, any link between things that pregnant mothers ingest and autism?
So there is some information out there that of very low risk for some antidepressants, but some of the evidence is conflicting. So some studies have shown that, some have not. I will mention that there is a lot of talk out there about vaccines causing autism. Mm-hmm. That was published in a big paper years ago, and since that time has very much been debunked by repeated studies with large and large amounts of kids. So vaccinating children does not lead to autism.
So when it comes to pregnant mothers and Tylenol, has there been any research that indicates Tylenol is a causative factor when it comes to their child having autism?
No, there's no research that I'm aware of.
And you study this for a living, right?
Correct, yes.
Yeah,
yes.
Okay. So what about this leucovorin? Mimics folic acid? I don't know anything about that. I would just, again, as a pregnant mother, you got to be careful about whatever you take, right? Because it's going to affect the child that you're carrying. So the president says, and I'm not trying to make this about the president at all, I'm just trying to make it about autism and pregnant mothers and what they should or shouldn't do. He's talking about leucovorin. I think that's how you say it, leucovorin. I don't know anything about that, but I would, again, if I knew somebody that was pregnant, I'd say, well, let's hold off here before we take anything to make sure that it's okay and check with a doctor. Thoughts?
Yeah, so leucovorin is folinic acid, which is a form of folate or vitamin B9. Mm-hmm. It's used to treat certain types of anemia and can counteract some of the effects of specific cancer drugs. But it's there's no connection between that and autism. However, for pregnant mothers, there's very few studies about what pregnant mothers can take safely, because obviously they're carrying a baby and mm-hmm. everyone wants to be safe. So it is certainly advised to be cautious with what type of medicines you're taking while you are pregnant.
Let me take a break. We'll pick it up. We come back talking to Dr. Megan Mayer, assistant professor of clinical psychiatry at LSU Health New Orleans. We'll talk about cures for autism, or what kind of research is being done as to what causes autism, because it seems like, well, first it was vaccines, now we're going with Tylenol, and everybody, maybe it's become a promise or something that they want to cure autism, but is that anything that's really on the horizon? Dr. Megan Mayer, assistant professor of clinical psychiatry at LSU Health New Orleans. It is 7:51, 9 till 8, traffic now, WWL. 7:57, a half. Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking with Dr. Megan Mayer, assistant professor of clinical psychiatry at LSU Health New Orleans. Dr. Mayer, you're looking at it from a different way. And look, you know, when it comes to science, man, leave the politics out of this. Leave President Trump out of it. Leave RFK Jr. out of it. Leave Dick Durbin out of it. I don't know. I'm just picking names from both sides. Akeem Jeffries, whomever. Just leave it all out of there and just talk about it from a scientific standpoint. How concerned should mothers be when it comes to what they ingest during pregnancy as it relates to autism?
So first I'll say that concerned mothers who are taking medications or any kind of supplement while they're pregnant should certainly talk to their OBGYN mm-hmm. if they have any issues or concerns about medicines that they're taking. But there's little information out there about what medications might lead to autism. President Trump's claims that Tylenol is leading to autism cases is not founded. There's been some very small studies that point to some possible correlation, but when they've looked at all the different confounding factors within the study and then looked at it with millions of children, they have not found Tylenol to be a risk factor for autism.
So to look at it from the other way, you shouldn't be taking Tylenol unless you absolutely need it or anything if you're pregnant, right?
Correct. So, yes. So whatever you are putting into your body or ingesting when pregnant, you certainly want to be careful and cautious. And can certainly talk with your OB if you have any concerns about specific medications or supplements.
Thank you, Doctor. I appreciate it. Dr. Megan Mayer, Assistant Professor of Clinical Psychiatry at LSU Health New Orleans. And the only thing I would ask again is when you talk about medical advice or scientific stuff, just forget who even said it. Just look at it like a double blind kind of thing where it's like, well, okay, let's evaluate the statement on its own merit. Forget who said it and see if there's anything to it. We'll talk with Jeff Nowak, WWL Saints sideline reporter. When we come back, we'll look back at the Seahawks ahead to the Bills here on WWL. Thank you, Ian. Thank you, Joe. 909, making our way through this Tuesday morning, joined by our friend Kelly Schultz, Senior Vice President of Communication and Public Relations for New Orleans & Company. How you doing, Kelly?
Hey, Tommy. Good morning. How are you?
Kelly, I remember when you were just a girl from Chalmette. You remember those days?
I'm still a girl from Chalmette.
No, you're not.
We've been talking for a long time.
We have. Let's talk about the how's everything at New Orleans & Company, first of all?
Things are good. We've got a lot going on, and in 2 days, we're actually launching the fifth annual NOLA by NOLA, the music festival that we started during the COVID years, and it keeps growing and expanding every year. And we've also got this amazing culinary event that we just secured for next year.
Let me talk about NOLA by NOLA first for people that know of it but don't know about it, Christy. Kelly, I'm sorry. Too many K's.
Sure. So if you think back to the 2021 when the COVID pandemic was kind of going on, and there was a period of time and we were supposed to have Jazz Fest in October, and it became clear that it wasn't safe to have large gatherings at that point. And so Sid Greenbaum and New Orleans & Company and a number of our partners got together and said, why don't we find a way to still support musicians during this time and get people into the music clubs, but do it in smaller, safer, more intimate venues? And from that idea, NOLA by NOLA was born. So it's New Orleanians helping New Orleanians. And it became, you know, a 10-day period where they had dozens of shows at music clubs around the city. And it started as something in response to COVID, but it's become so popular. We are now doing it for our fifth time. It's become part of our annual fall calendar. So it kicks off Thursday. It's 10 days of music shows, all kinds of special events. And it's really like every neighborhood, every genre. Only in New Orleans could we pull this off. It's really an amazing thing to see how much it's grown.
Only in New Orleans could you have Big Frida with the Louisiana Philharmonic.
Exactly.
That I am.
You know,
go ahead.
One of the beautiful things about this, too, is that the musicians weren't looking at each other as competitors. The music clubs were not looking at each other as competitors. Everyone was promoting everyone to say, this is a really tough time. We have to support each other, and we have to bring work to these musicians and to all of the people who make their living in the hospitality industry and the music industry. So, you know, Sig and the team have really grown this event. Lots of great information on our website, neworleans.com, and also you can see all the shows and events that are happening over the next 10 days or so.
So somebody coordinates all of this, Kelly, and puts it all together. And I guess the next question after that would be, how big could this get?
Well, you know, we definitely would like to see it become a staple of our fall calendar. Mm-hmm. And it has been, fortunately, for the past 5 years. So SIG and the team in New Orleans and company, this is so much fun for us to promote and market. And we've got some ads running all over the country right now touting reasons to visit New Orleans this fall. And NOLA by NOLA is certainly one of those reasons. So we want to keep it up. And it's really a fun thing to promote. But it's really about people getting out and not just visitors, Tommy. I mean, this is something that locals can enjoy mm-hmm. as well. So every neighborhood, every type of music, incredible talent. It's all part of NOLA by NOLA, and we love being a part of it.
And it is getting some out of town attention, right, Kelly?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah, we bring in journalists and out of town visitors. We promote it to out of town visitors. We've got advertising running throughout different states. So we definitely want people to come in and make a weekend or make a week out of it.
I love something like that that starts, I guess a serendipitous start to it where you didn't really know what you were doing, but you had no idea that it could evolve into this. Did you at the time?
No, I mean, we did it as an immediate response to the ongoing COVID pandemic as a way to support musicians. And it's become an annual tradition. So I think that's one of the many ways that New Orleanians are innovative and resilient. I know sometimes we hate that word resilient, mm-hmm. but this is a really innovative program that has taken off. And it's now part of every late September, early October, and then throughout the month of October, we celebrate Music Month. So October gives us another sort of marketing opportunity to really highlight New Orleans musicians and opportunities to support them.
I don't hate resilient. When did that become pejorative?
Well, sometimes, you know, when we had the Katrina 20th anniversary, mm-hmm. there were some folks that were like, "Ugh, I wish we didn't have reasons to keep being resilient," mm-hmm. you know? But it's an okay word, I think.
Well, let me talk to you and Chalmette for a little bit, if I may. Bruh, there's always going to be something to overcome, right? I mean, that's life. So I don't know why resilience is bad. It's not what you achieve. It's what you overcome. And there's always going to be something to overcome. Let's talk about the Bocas d'Or. And I hope I don't hurt myself with this. Coupe du Monde de la Pâtisserie. Close?
Yes, very good. Basically, it's the Pastry World Cup. So this is something that we secured in 2024. And New Orleans was the first city in the country, in North America, actually, to host this event. This is, Tommy, they call this the Culinary Olympics, and it is extremely prestigious. Chefs from all over the world compete to earn their spot in the Bocuse d'Or, which is basically an extremely elite cooking competition, and then the Pastry World Cup, which is the same competition for pastry chefs from around the world. So we convinced them to come to New Orleans in the summer of 2024. They did. They had such a good experience that they announced yesterday that they're going to be returning to New Orleans for Bocuse d'Or and Pastry World Cup in the summer of 2026. So this is a really big deal in the culinary world, and it's a big honor to have these famous chefs and competitors from all over the world coming here. And next year, it's going to coincide with the Louisiana Restaurant Association showcase that they have every summer. So they get about 6,000 people who participate in their show, and it'll be all happening at the same time as Bocuse and Pastry World Cup.
I believe Florence Pugh did a movie, We Live in Time, that's related to that. Did she not? Do you know about that movie?
I'm not sure. I don't know about that one.
Yeah, I'm pretty sure because there's something going on, and they try to become involved in that or whatever. That's not the point. Is this something that people can get involved with, Kelly, or is it just for the chef world?
No, people can absolutely purchase tickets. We haven't yet put out ticket information, but we will. I'll tell you, I had a chance to go to this in 2024, and it is really intense. I mean, it is a serious competition. When they said, you know, it's the Culinary Olympics, I wasn't really sure what that...
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
At Designer Shoe Warehouse, we believe that shoes are an important part of, well,
everything. From first steps to first dates, from all-nighters to all-time personal bests.
From building pillow forts to building a life.
For all the big and small moments that make up your whole world, DSW is there. And we've got just the shoes. Find a shoe for every you from brands you love at bragworthy prices. At your DSW store or DSW.com.
I'm done with subscriptions. Streaming, fitness, razors, vitamins. I've got subscriptions for everything in my life. They lock you in, and half the time, I can't figure out how to unsubscribe. That's why I'm so excited about the new Blue Apron. Now you can get delicious meals delivered with no subscription needed, including new pre-made options. Keep the flavor. Ditch the subscription. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
Fun fact, you can't get pregnant every day. You're only fertile for 6 days, ovulation day and the 5 days leading up to it. Natural Cycles is the only birth control app that can pinpoint your fertile window by analyzing your hormone-driven temperature trends. It's more than just a basic cycle tracking app. Natural Cycles is the only FDA-cleared and CE-marked birth control app, and has helped millions prevent and plan for pregnancy naturally. Save 15% when you sign up today with code RADIO15. Learn more at naturalcycles.com.
And I had the honor of witnessing the announcement of the winners. And in 2024, the Americas, so this is the Americas selection. Mm-hmm. So teams from North and South America compete in New Orleans. And if they win here, they have a chance to compete in the finals, which happens in January in France. So I witnessed the winning team of the Pastry World Cup last year, which happened to be from Argentina. And you have grown men who are the chefs who are honored, and they're weeping and they're playing their national anthem. And it's really this solemn, beautiful moment, very much like what you see at an Olympic Games. Mm-hmm. But it's for the culinary world. And so, yes, it is something that we will be selling tickets open to the public, and it's really worth seeing. And I'll tell you, what these pastry chefs create, it doesn't even look like food. Mm. I mean, it is just these exquisite works of art that are on display throughout the competition. It's definitely worth seeing. And for us, you know, to be able to say of all the great culinary cities in the Americas, for New Orleans to host this is a big deal.
And they bring cheering sections with them, right? People actually cheer on the different teams?
They do. You know, the competitors bring their family and friends, and there's this great energy. This all takes place at the Montreal Convention Center. There's this unbelievable energy, and their family and friends are cheering them on, and they're waving the flags from their countries. And again, the food that they prepare, there's a judging panel, a jury who selects the winners. And we also have an opportunity to have our local chef community participate. So last year we had Emeril and EJ Lagasse. We had Alon Shaya, Nina Compton, Frank Brightson, some incredible New Orleans talent who were part of the competition as well. And they worked with these international chefs to infuse Louisiana cuisine into what they were preparing. So it was really fun to see these chefs from around the world, you know, working with Louisiana alligator and sausage and stuff like that as they were preparing these just masterpieces.
I know
what they do.
I know Kelly Schultz, Chalmette Girl. I know Kelly Schultz, New Orleans and Company. I don't know about Kelly Schultz in the kitchen. Are you much of a chef?
Oh, my goodness. No, I am not. I'm one of the rare Louisiana women that do not know how to cook. But I'll tell you, that's okay, because I get to enjoy lots of other great food at restaurants and stuff that's prepared by people who do know how to cook. So,
what's that old joke?
You do not want me in the kitchen.
A stove that flushes, huh?
Exactly.
What's interesting, too, about this pastry competition is that And people at Cook know this, that when it comes to pastry, that is really the science part of it, where this is a science experiment that you're doing, and it's not where you can add a little bit of this or a little bit of that or fix it with that. You better be on your game, or else it's not going to work. It's not going to happen.
Exactly. And this is why another reason our convention center is so great. I mean, they have to look at every single meticulous detail, like the temperature in the room and the amount of humidity in the room and what, how that's going to interact with these incredible creations that the chefs are doing. And so, they had so much fun here in New Orleans, in 2024, and we're really excited to be able to bring them back next summer and then to have it partner with the Louisiana Restaurant Association and do it at the same time as all of their partners and chefs are together is going to be a new twist.
So take us out, Kelly, New Orleans and Company. What else is on the menu? Pardon the pun, but what else are you guys looking at, anticipating, excited about?
Yeah, we're just working hard to finish 2025. This has been an unusual year, I'll tell you, and it's been kind of a tough year actually when it comes to tourism. But we're working hard to bring in these new events and keep the business coming. Of course. We've talked about Nola by Nola and Bocuse today, but every day we have conventions and meeting guests arriving in the city that we have brought here. So we've got some big meetings and conventions coming up in the fall, and we're just looking to head into 2026 strong.
Thank you, Kelly Schultz. I appreciate it. And people to find out more about Nola by Nola, they do what?
They can go to neworleans.com.
Thank you, my friend. Have a good day.
Thanks, Tommy.
Good luck with the cooking, but again, I'm like you, I'd rather eat than cook. Kelly Schultz, Senior Vice President, Communications, Public Relations for New Orleans and Company. We'll take a break. We come back. We're going to talk to Dr. Judy Ho, Clinical and Forensic Neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, about how do you walk the line between giving your kids some privacy and making sure they aren't falling down some kind of rabbit hole or being subject to some predator somewhere. And we'll also talk about adult kids as well, 922, grandkids, you name it. Tommy Tucker back in a flash, WWL. 9:30 here on this Tuesday morning, joined by our friend Dr. Judy Ho, clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. How you doing, Dr. Judy?
I'm doing well. How are you, Tommy?
I'm okay. How's everything in L.A. today?
Pretty good. Pretty good. I'm kind of just astounded that we're at the last quarter of the year.
Yeah.
I mean, really the last one-fifth of the year.
Goes by quickly, doesn't it?
Really does.
Especially
when we don't have any weather patterns here. It's like, it's actually almost October.
Yeah, been there doing that. Especially with school starting in August as it did here because of hurricane season. I'm thinking it's like, Thanksgiving already. We're not even in October yet. Let's talk about kids and social media, because it's not only about parents, but it's about grandkids. Because back in the day, all a grandparent had to do was make sure the kid did the homework and kept them out of the trees or away from the dogs or the street or whatever. But now it's a completely different environment out there, isn't it?
Yes, definitely. I mean, there's obviously so many different things to think about. I know just based on being a parent of a young child myself, the conversations I'm having with other parents, with other grandparents, and it just feels like there's a lot more to manage maybe than when we were younger, from a lot of different ways. Overwhelmed by all of the information about what you're supposed to do or not to do, and then just kind of fearing bad things happening to your child. I feel like that's been a bit more of a prevalent feeling than it has been in previous generations too.
So when it comes to what's going on in the child's head, because I've had discussions with pediatricians about this, and you're a clinical and forensic neuropsychologist, what's going on in these kids' heads when they're on social media? Are they getting dopamine hits? What's happening here?
Yeah, so there's a lot of research about how, especially in younger brains, our executive function parts of our brain are not very well developed. And so those parts of the brain are really requiring a lot more attention, a lot more thoughtfulness in terms of how we approach working with them every single day. And when you give kids too many quick hits, it actually disrupts their executive function development.
And that does happen when they're on the phone, right? Whether it's social media or a game or whatever it is, that's what's going on in the brain, the dopamine hits?
Exactly. And it's kind of in an unnatural way is what some of the research has been finding. And I'm so sorry, our toddler just woke up here.
That's okay.
hey, Luca. So essentially, what happens is when there is a social media hit of any kind, whether it's a ping or here's a message, getting that hit repeatedly too quickly, as opposed to more natural rewards where it might be more gradual, it might not be as high, and then your brain starts getting dulled to the rewards of natural events that are supposed to bring them happiness, like having a good meal, having a fun play date. You know, your brain just doesn't fire those reward hormones quite as quickly. And because dopamine is both a reward hormone and a hormone, every time you experience it, your brain is clocking it as, oh, this is something that feels good, and I want to feel this again. So it's remembering what you did to get this particular feeling, which, of course, in this case, is doing something with a quick hit on social media. So then you become more motivated to reach for your phone the next time.
And what I think is interesting about this is we're talking about the brain itself of a 10 to 12-year-old where things like TikTok, Instagram, Snapchat, it impacts their brain differently than it would an adult, right?
Exactly. And I think this is part of the, you know, PSA about social media and how much use it really should be. And we have to remember that these platforms, and so they want to be able to make it as enticing as possible for you to spend more time on the platform. As an adult, of course, there are some pros and cons of that as well, but especially in children, this is why there's so much talk about limiting screen time, and that doesn't include just social media. Of course, it includes just all screen time, and there's a reason for that, because in younger brains, the lengthier the time, the potentially more adverse the outcomes, especially in a developing brain, especially in things like executive function we just talked about, but also emotional control. So being able to regulate your own emotions, being able to calm yourself down when you're stressed, using different methods to calm yourself down that might be more healthy than thinking that maybe if I just watch TikTok for 2 hours, that's going to make me feel better about my life. You and I have talked about this before, Tommy, but in terms of the emotional regulation piece, kids have been heard to, you know, get violent with their parents when they're not violent children, when their parents take away the device as a consequence for bad behavior. So it's becoming a bit of a bigger problem, I think, over time.
So we're talking about that so-called happy hormones, right? You're talking about oxytocin and dopamine. But what about when it's something on social media that's negative? What happens in the brain then?
Well, children are a lot, I guess it's really a lot harder for them to get their mind off of something once their mind is stuck on something as well. That's also a part of the, you know, executive function development. And so once you see something negative, an adult might be able to say, well, that was awful, but let me try to separate myself, walk away, do what I need to do next, a little bit easier than children, who will then just essentially spiral oftentimes after reading negative news. Not only are they much more prone to doom scrolling as well, but it's just harder for them to be able to shift focus in a way that is productive. So sometimes after children read really negative news, it will be hard for them to do other responsibilities for the day, go to school, do their homework, disengage themselves from that and interact with their family and friends and so forth.
So we're not talking about bullying or anything like that. We're just talking about a 10 to 12-year-old kid and what's going on inside of their brain with the hormones and the reaction to what they see on social media. This is when, and I'll put this in quotation marks, when everything's going well, right?
Right, exactly. And I think that especially in the 10 to 12-year-old, we have to remember too, that that's a very tough time for their identity development, for social development. Most times children will say that that's the hardest time when they, you know, when they're struggling with feeling like they belong, struggling with making friends. So they're actually most vulnerable in many ways, just in terms of their brain development, but also just in terms of social development, identity development, things that we expect them to be working through during that age range. It's already hard enough. And then, of course, this adds to the problem, too.
Somebody texted this in, and I think it's a pretty good question. With everything we've heard about as it relates to autism. Has there ever been any research about social media and either its effect on autism or causation or anything like that?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I don't think that there has been any robust research linking social media and autism in terms of, for example, increasing risk for certain behaviors. However, I would say that some individuals who might struggle with social interactions, and that's not just autism spectrum, mm-hmm. but just in general, people who might feel a little more uncomfortable in certain social settings, there is an increased risk of becoming more addicted to social media because it's a way for them to get some kind of social interaction that feels comfortable for them.
So it could be good, could be bad.
Yeah, I think that some of it. I'm so sorry, you hear Luca. He's having a little bit of a little tantrum.
We
right
can
now.
Barely but, hear him. That's your problem. I'm just kidding.
Oh, that's good. Oh, actually, that's good. But you know the.
Hey, Dr. Judy.
Social media, I think.
Mine's 29. That's your problem. Sorry.
yeah, but I was just gonna say, you know, kids who struggle with social interactions, as I mentioned. The pros and cons are sometimes they, you know, get a little bit of that social modeling or social interaction from social media. It helps them. But then in other risk factors, they may actually have a more difficult time connecting in real life even more so if they become reliant on social media for their social needs. And of course, we know that that's not a complete solution. I don't want to say that social media is completely horrible. We try to have a balanced conversation about, of course, there are pros as well. But when people become overly reliant on it, it can sometimes slow or stunt their development in real life in terms of their social skills and social cognition.
Somebody texted in about finding their identity, and I we'll pick that up when we come back, but I always thought that it would be tough for a child to be an actor because in my head, when I was a kid, I was still trying to figure out who I am and what I'm, you know, what my personality is and what I'm like, as opposed to now all of a sudden I'm Johnny who has a parent that's an alcoholic or whatever. Well, wait a minute. Now that's the role, but that's not really me. And we'll talk about the role of social media and all of that as well when we come back. Our guest, Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. Problems with dopamine and oxytocin hits when everything's going well on social media, no bullying or anything else. So you have to watch that and make sure that you don't overdo it. But it is a part of life. And also somebody texted in about grandchild 2 years old constantly on the phone. I don't know at what point cognitive skills kick in for kids where they're aware of this or that or the other thing. But we'll find out when we come back. 940 traffic now, WWL. 9:45, quarter till 10, Tommy Tucker, WWL, talking to our friend Dr. Judy Ho, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast, about giving your kids some privacy, but yet making sure they aren't going down rabbit holes. And we were talking about 10 to 12-year-olds, but let me go back before we go forward, Dr. Judy, and that is when it comes to somebody texting in about a grandkid on a phone 2 years old.
Can you build me a Spider-Man car?
Oh, really?
Did you hear that? I'm sorry.
No, that's okay. He made a good point.
Oh, my gosh.
All points are good here. We accept all points. No, but really, when it comes to 2 years old or however old Luca is and on the phone, at what point do they become aware? Do we know when they become aware of what they're watching, what they're seeing? Because you could stumble upon anything, right?
Right. So absolutely. So this is kind of interesting because I was watching, so Luca's unbelievably, Tommy, Luca's almost four, and we let him watch YouTube Kids, right? So it's supposed to be kind of more, obviously, more censored, more filtered, et cetera. But unbelievably, the other day, I saw that he was watching a video of a plane crash on YouTube Kids. Mm. Yeah. And I mean, it was a simulated one, right, with a toy. But I mean, literally the title says, look at this plane crash. And it was like supposed to simulate a true plane crashing, like with, you know, pretty realistic backgrounds and everything like that. I'm like, how is this okay to be on YouTube? So in terms of monitoring, I think that clearly you can't just trust that a platform says it's safe for kids. Sometimes maybe the material still is not very appropriate. And you don't want to go completely down a rabbit hole. You don't want to be so
stress that you don't let them do anything. And most parents of young children will say, yeah, of course, you know, be great for my kids to have no screen time. But that's just not possible because sometimes we need to do chores or adults want to talk to one another. And then you turn on some TV, some YouTube for them so that they can just do that while you do what you need to do.
Well, and it is their world, right, Dr. Judy, that they're going to be growing up and living in?
Of course. Of course. So if you can't totally shield them from it. It's going to be part of their lives, as you mentioned. I mean, my child is better at navigating YouTube than some adults are, right? Because of their familiarity growing up in this generation. So I think the best thing you can do is just think about in your household or for you, what are the most important ground rules and what makes the most sense for you in terms of safe consumption and okay consumption in terms of even time, duration, time of day, context. And then, of course, check their feed, check their history, do what you can to monitor them as much as you can. But also, mistakes might happen along the way. You know, you might stumble on something where you're like, oh, I wish they didn't watch that. But try your best to just turn that into an educational opportunity and think about how you might prevent that the next time. It's not really going to be foolproof. It's kind of like you have to learn as you go along.
So what are some signs that maybe your teenager, your grandson, granddaughter, whatever, whoever it is in your life, is maybe going down the wrong path or having a problem with social media?
I think if they're starting to do this at the exclusion of almost all other activities, that would be one very important sign. A second very important sign would be if they essentially become extremely emotionally dysregulated anytime you try to take the device away. So, of course, they might protest a little bit. They might complain. And especially if the children are younger, but I would say for all children, it's important to give them a warning like, okay, 5 more minutes and then we're going to take that away, or 5 more minutes and we're going to start cleaning up. If you just yank it out of their hands, that's never going to be received well. But if you've given them sort of that proper countdown and they still just can't regulate themselves after you take the device from them, they throw a tantrum, they start throwing things, they start screaming at you. That would be another very important sign. If they start to isolate themselves a lot, they're not interacting socially with the family or with their friends, and you're noticing that they're spending more and more time with their device, that might be another concern. And then, of course, any other overt signs of depression, anxiety, or just looking like they're really stressed, that would be another important sign, because we do know that sometimes excessive social media consumption can lead to an increased risk for depression and anxiety. And that is especially the case for preteen and teen girls. It happens across the gender, but it is most significant in the age range of 8 to 16 in females.
How do you address that as a parent? And I understand, you know, theoretically you say, well, we just have a discussion about social media. But what do you tell them? I mean, what do? You ignore the fact that Janie down the street thinks you're ugly, or ignore the fact that this one doesn't like your hair, or that or the other thing?
Yeah, of course, it's hard to ignore, and you can't ignore it because that's the context that they've grown up in, and they're living this situation right now.
Which it always was. So there always were mean girls, but now it's to the nth extreme, right? An instant?
Right. It's so easy, right? Because
and
you're hiding behind the screen.
Mm-hmm.
Exactly. And it could even be strangers. It could be in platforms you're not even aware of, right? Social media is the most common one, but, you know, it could be chat rooms and video games. I mean, there's just so many ways in which this can happen. And so I think what's important is that you acknowledge that reality, right? It's not like, oh, just don't pay them any mind, or, well, if you weren't on social media, you wouldn't have seen that. It's like, well, that's just impossible, right? Because,
well, and that's not going to salve any hurt feelings at all. That's not going to help that.
Right, exactly. And also, even if you're trying to stay off social media, your friend might say, hey, so-and-so posted this about you.
Mm-hmm.
You know, so it's just impossible. So you have to just recognize that this is their reality. I would say, to the best of your ability, treat it as if they were being teased or bullied in the actual school, because obviously you can relate to that. You know that it happened, even if it's not to you. Back in the day on the playground, things happen to other kids that way. And we, most of us, have witnessed it, if not experienced it. And just recognize that this is basically just like any other form of bullying, except sometimes it can even be worse. Acknowledge that that's painful. And then really just ask them, you know, how can you help them? Sometimes it's really helpful just to have an open-ended question like, well, is there anything I can do to help? you know, not necessarily go to the school. Maybe they're embarrassed. They don't want you to do that. Okay, but what else can I do to help you to feel better? And then I think really save the tips for safer social media use or ways to calm down towards the end of the conversation. Because if you start that in the beginning, it can feel a bit like a lecture, right? So just let them open up to you. Let them express their feelings. And at the end, give them a couple of tips on how to manage social media a little bit better. Try to cheer them up. You know, spend more time connecting with them and don't give up on monitoring their social media, because it's just one of the things that we have to do now as parents and grandparents and caregivers. It's always got to be on our radar somehow.
Yeah, it's always something. Thank you, Dr. Judy. I appreciate your time. Take care, Luca.
Thank you,
Tom. No, you
have
will.
A good week.
You too. Dr. Judy Hope, clinical forensic neuropsychologist, host of the Supercharged Life podcast. We're going to take a break. We'll find out what Newell's got planned for us when we come back on WWL.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
What kind of programs does this school have? How are the test scores? How many kids do a classroom? Homes.com knows these are all things you ask when you're home shopping as a parent. That's why each listing on Homes.com includes extensive reports on local schools, including photos, parent reviews, test scores, student-teacher ratio, school rankings, and more. The information is from multiple trusted sources and curated by Homes.com's dedicated in-house research team. It's all so you can make the right decision for your family. Homes.com. We've done your homework.
Why does every recipe I try need 18 ingredients, including a jar of something paste I'll never use again but will sit in my fridge for 9 months? I just want dinner in the oven, fast. That's why I love Blue Apron's new one-pan assemble and bake meals. They send you fresh ingredients that are already chopped. All you do is put it all together and bake. That's it. No chopping, no weird leftovers, just delicious, easy-to-make meals. Get 20% off your first two orders with code APRON20. Terms and conditions apply. Visit blueapron.com/terms for more.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you love true crime or comedy, celebrity interviews or news, you call the shots on what's in your podcast queue. And guess what? Now you can call them on your auto insurance, too, with the Name Your Price tool from Progressive. It works just the way it sounds. You tell Progressive how much you want to pay for car insurance, and they'll show you coverage options that fit your budget. Get your quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Price and coverage match limited by state law.
True North Convenience Stores and Red Bull are an elite matchup. True North offers returning players Red Bull Original and Sugar-Free. First-round picks like Watermelon, Wild Berries, and the newest rookie, Red Bull Zero. Right now, grab three of your favorite 8-ounce can flavors for $6.50 and save 10 cents off a gallon with the True Rewards mobile app, available in your favorite app store. Rush into True North to score this deal before the clock runs out. True North Convenience Stores. Fast, friendly, clean.